So we're going to have part two of our God in the Movies series. This is Avatar, the series, the animated series. And to share with us, and I want to give him a really big welcome this morning, we've got Jacob, and he's also brought his mother, Rachel, along with him as well. So let's welcome Rachel and Jacob.
Oh, okay. So I first watched Avatar, The Last Airbender, when I was in third grade, I believe. I loved it instantly. I really liked Avatar because it has adventure, comedy, and thoughtful storylines. The lead characters are martial artists with magical abilities, but they're also kids, like me, who make jokes, sing songs, and encounter eccentric characters in difficult situations. In the world of Avatar, there are four nations representing four elements: water, fire, earth, and air. In each nation, some people can bend, a kind of magic where they move an element using martial arts movements. We're going to start with a title sequence because it summarizes the premise pretty clearly.
Water.
A figure moves water through the air.
Earth.
Another kicks a boulder.
Fire.
A third shoots fire.
Air.
A fourth creates a blast of air.
Long ago, the four nations lived together in harmony. Then, everything changed when the Fire Nation attacked. Only the Avatar, master of all four elements, could stop them. But when the world needed him most, he vanished. 100 years passed, and my brother and I discovered the new Avatar, an airbender named Aang. And although his airbending skills are great, he has a lot to learn before he's ready to save anyone. But I believe Aang can save the world.
A title appears, Avatar, The Last Airbender, created by Michael Dante DiMartino and Brian Konietzko.
By the way, I think it's now pretty clear I'm talking about the Nickelodeon TV series that ran from 2006 to 2008. Even if you haven't seen the series, you probably know the memes. I'm definitely not talking about the Avatar movie with space elves. Over the three seasons of Avatar, Last Airbender, we watch the main characters grow up. They learn to master their bending skills while also coming to understand themselves and each other. And they come to learn about the universe in which they live. What begins as a battle between good versus evil becomes more complicated as the show progresses. The entire series is a work of art that I really recommend to everyone. But today we're going to focus on just one episode that appears in season one of Avatar. It's called The Storm. So we know from the introduction we just watched that everything changed when the Fire Nation attacked. We also know that a powerful figure called the Avatar is the only one who might have been able to stop the war. But when the world needed him most, he vanished. The entire series begins when two teenagers named Katara and Sokka free the Avatar from a sphere of ice, where he was frozen in time. The Avatar, it turns out, is a 12-year-old boy named Aang, an air nomad. He is the last of his people who were wiped out by the war. Aang, along with Katara and Sokka, the teenagers who discovered him, go on a journey so Aang can learn all of the elements and defeat the Fire Lord to end the war. They are being pursued, however, by the Fire Lord's son, Zuko, who wants to capture the Avatar and bring him back to his father. My mom will talk about Zuko in a bit. I'm going to talk a little more about Aang. Most of the time, Aang seems happy, but he still has a lot of regrets about the decades he spent trapped in ice, unable to stop the Fire Nation. Aang feels he ran away when his people needed him most. At the beginning of episode 12, his feelings affect his dreams.
Text on a white background reads, Book 1, Water, Chapter 12, The Storm. Aang beams as he rides alone on Appa's back. Sokka flies Aang's glider ahead of them. Aang grins at Katara flying atop a gigantic version of Momo.
We need you, Aang. I need you too.
Aang's eyes widen. A gigantic storm cloud hangs in the air ahead of them.
Guys!
He looks around.
Guys?
Gyatso floats in front of Aang.
Gyatso?
Why did you disappear?
I didn't mean to.
Aang reaches toward Gyatso, who dissolves into a cloud of smoke. Aang shields his eyes.
We need you, Aang.
He enters the storm cloud. Aang and Appa plunge into the ocean.
We need you, Aang. We need you. We need you, Aang. We need you.
An image of Fire Lord Ozai flashes. Then Aang wakes.
What's going on? Did we get captured again?
It's nothing. I just had a bad dream. Go back to sleep.
Don't have to tell me twice.
Are you all right, Aang?
I'm okay.
You seem to be having a lot of nightmares lately. You want to tell me about it?
I think I just need some rest.
You...
So this episode of Avatar shows two main characters, Aang, who we just met, and Zuko, both grappling with guilt and regret. They are set up as antagonists, but the episode shows them wrestling with similar feelings. Aang's dream sets up that gut emotional reaction that many of us have to the feeling of guilt and regret. It shows us how the past can manifest in unexpected ways, even when our conscious mind thinks everything is fine. As the episode progresses, we see how that gut feeling can manifest in behavior. Jacob will look at Aang's actions, and I'll talk about Zuko, who can be identified in the next clip by his ponytail and facial scar. And you'll see the storm referred to in the episode title is brewing, a physical sign of the tension in Aang and Zuko's inner lives.
Zuko stand on the deck of Zuko's ship.
There is a storm coming. A big one.
You're out of your mind, Uncle. The weather's perfect. There's not a cloud in sight.
A storm is approaching from the north. I suggest we alter our course and head southwest.
We know the Avatar is traveling northward, so we will do the same.
Prince Zuko, consider the safety of the crew.
The safety of the crew doesn't matter.
Zuko glances at a passing crew member who arches an eyebrow at him.
Finding the Avatar is far more important than any individual's safety.
They scowl at each other. Zuko heads inside.
He doesn't mean that. He's just all worked up.
In a port town, Katara stands at a street vendor's stall holding a melon.
It's good. It's perfect. I'm telling you.
She shakes the melon.
I don't know if I like the sound of that swishing.
Swishing means it's ripe. It's the ripe juices swishing around, huh?
I think it's true, Katara. Swishing means it's ripe.
I just realized we're out of money anyway.
Ah!
The vendor snatches a basket of produce from Sokka's hand and kicks him.
Out of food and out of money. Now what are we supposed to do?
You could get a job, smart guy.
We shouldn't go out there. Please, the fish can wait. There's going to be a terrible storm.
Ah, you're crazy. It's a nice day. No clouds, no wind, no nothing. So quit your nagging, woman.
Maybe we should find some shelter.
Are you kidding? Shelter from what?
My joints say there's going to be a storm. A bad one.
Well, it's your joints against my brain.
Then I hope your brain can find someone else to haul that fish, because I ain't coming.
Then I'll find a new fish hauler and pay him double what you get. How you like that?
I'll go.
You're hired.
What? You said get a job, and he's paying double.
Double? Who told you that nonsense?
Now Zuko's ship sails toward a thick bank of storm clouds.
Looks like your uncle was right about the storm after all.
Lucky guess.
Lieutenant! You'd better learn some respect, or I will teach it to you.
What do you know about respect? The way you talk to everyone around here, from your hardworking crew to your esteemed uncle, shows you know nothing about respect. You don't care about anyone but yourself. Then again, what should I expect from a spoiled prince?
Zuko and the lieutenant move into fighting stances.
Easy now.
They clash their forearms together. Iroh pushes them apart.
Enough. We're all a bit tired from being at sea so long. I'm sure after a bowl of noodles, everyone will feel much better.
The lieutenant and the other soldiers depart.
I don't need your help keeping order on my ship.
Iroh touches Zuko's shoulder. Zuko shrugs his hand away and steps toward the bow. Now Sokka loads supplies onto a ship. Aang and Katara stand nearby.
Sokka, maybe this isn't such a good idea. Look at the sky.
I said I was going to do this job. I can't back out just because of some bad weather.
The boy with the tattoos has some sense. You should listen to him.
Boy with tattoos? Airbender tattoos. Well, I'll be a hog monkey's uncle. You're the Avatar, ain't you?
That's right.
Well, don't be so smiley about it. The Avatar disappeared for 100 years. You turned your back on the world.
Don't yell at him. Aang would never turn his back on anyone.
Oh, he wouldn't, huh? Then I guess I must have imagined the last 100 years of war and suffering.
Aang is the bravest person I know. He has done nothing but help people and save lives since I met him. It's not his fault he disappeared, right, Aang?
Aang backs away.
Aang, what's wrong?
He jumps onto his glider and flies toward nearby cliffs.
That's right. Keep flying!
As you travel the world throughout the first season of Avatar, Aang and his friends have gotten used to being treated as heroes. So it's a bit shocking when the fisherman recognizes Aang as the Avatar and says, "The Avatar disappeared for 100 years. You turned your back on the world." This hits Aang exactly where he feels most guilty, that he abandoned his responsibility for the past century. What does Aang do when confronted with this accusation? He runs away from the confrontation, which is exactly what he feels guilty about in the first place. I can definitely relate to Aang avoiding and running away from his feelings of guilt. I had once gotten very angry with one of my friends, and I said some things I should not have said. I did send him an apology, but it did not feel like enough. Over the next few weeks, I kept feeling shame and guilt, but I pushed those feelings aside and avoided the situation. I kept remembering what I had done. But whenever that happened, I would distract myself by reading a book or making small talk. But what I was really doing was trying to get the thought out of my head.
The other main character in this clip, Zuko, is dealing with feelings of regret and guilt as well. But as viewers, we don't yet know why. We can see the behavior that results. Whereas Aang practices avoidance, Zuko's behavior is aggression. He argues with his uncle Iroh, who warns him about the storm. And later, when a member of his crew calls out Zuko on his poor judgment, Zuko lashes out. "You better learn some respect, or I will teach it to you," he bellows. The whole situation escalates until Zuko is challenging one of his crew members to a firebending duel. Neither Aang nor Zuko's behaviors are very productive. They're ingrained reactions to the negative feelings about past mistakes. Neither avoidance nor aggression make Aang or Zuko feel better or improve the situation that's creating those negative feelings. The Trappist monk and 20th century author Thomas Merton described the cycle of mistake and regrets quite well when he said, "In our rush to escape the humiliation of our own mistakes, we run headfirst into the opposite error, seeking comfort and compensation. And so we spend our lives running back and forth from one attachment to another." For Aang and Zuko, rushing to escape past humiliation led them to avoidance and aggression. For some of us, it's other kinds of behaviors, distracting activities and bad habits. When those efforts at comfort and compensation produce more mistakes and more guilt, well, then we're in a spiral, running back and forth. I have a regret that I carry from childhood. It's the way I sometimes isolated myself from people. I was what some might call shy, and I've always been introverted. But it wasn't just that. It wasn't just a personality trait. I turned down offers of opportunities to spend time with people. I didn't reach out to people or offer myself as a friend that people could rely on, especially in high school. I remember one day my father insisting that I accept a social invitation. But instead of accepting his encouragement, I became angry and sullen, thinking that my father's advice was the problem. And of course, the argument became one more excuse to avoid meeting friends. Over time, isolating myself made me feel even more socially uncomfortable and less worthy of friendship. In this next clip, we see that the storm that was on the horizon is now raging. Aang and Katara seek shelter in a cave. The ship's crew go below board. Notice the parallels between these two locations. We learn more about events in Aang and Zuko's past. And in both settings, the storytellers are gathered around fires. In the midst of the big storm, there is a fire, a symbol of safety.
That's awful, Aang. I don't know what to say.
How could they do that to me? They wanted to take away everything I knew and everyone I love! Whoa, hot centers!
I'm sorry I got so mad. You have a right to be angry after the monks sent you away like that.
Well, that's not exactly what happened.
From a window above, Aang watches the other kids play in the courtyard.
I was afraid, confused. I didn't know what to do.
Aang flops onto his bed. Gyatso approaches Aang's door.
Aang, I'm not going to let them take you away from me. Aang?
Gyatso opens a scroll lying on Aang's bed. His eyes widen. Now Appa flies through a storm.
I never saw Gyatso again.
Aang and Appa plunge into the stormy water. Aang's eyes and arrows begin to glow. He presses his fists together. The glowing blue sphere forms around him and Appa. Ice spreads across the surface of the sphere.
Next thing I knew, I was waking up in your arms after you found me in the iceberg. You ran away. And then the Fire Nation attacked our temple. My people needed me and I wasn't there to help. You don't know what would have...
The world needed me and I wasn't there to help.
Aang, the fisherman was right. I did turn my back on the world.
You're being too hard on yourself. Even if you did run away, I think it was meant to be. If you had stayed, you would have been killed along with all the other airbenders.
You don't know that.
I know it's meant to be this way. The world needs you now. You give people hope.
Aang and Katara smile at each other.
Around a fire, Aang explains to Katara how he ran away from his home with the air nomads, became caught in the storm, and then trapped in ice. As he retells it, he regains more self-understanding. He remembers some of the frustrations and fears that led him to run away. Then he can finally acknowledge that what the fisherman said is true. He turned his back on the world. I told you about the friend I had gotten angry with. Like Aang, I had regretted what I had done. I would sometimes feel a feeling in the back of my head that something was wrong, and I'd think of him. I had to face something that I didn't like, that I had been unkind to my friend.
Now, we didn't see the clip with Zuko because I maybe sent in the wrong notes, but I'll explain that Zuko's story is told by his Uncle Iroh to the other members of the crew who are wondering why Zuko is always so angry. What we learn is that when he was younger, Zuko contradicted one of his father's generals. Feeling disrespected, Zuko's father, the Fire Lord, insisted on fighting his own son in a duel that left him permanently scarred. we can imagine the humiliation that Zuko felt, and perhaps that he blamed himself for losing his father's favor. This is why respect and honor is so important to Zuko, and why he lashes out at any sign of disrespect. My own journey away from self-isolation involved understanding my own story. And like Zuko, it involved a bully. The story came out when I was in my early 20s, tasked with a writing assignment in graduate school about the topic of powerlessness. Here's the story that I wrote down. In my first year of high school, I encountered a student who made it his business to harass me my entire freshman year. He would linger over my locker when I tried to open it and follow me along empty school hallways, kicking the backs of my legs or shooting rubber bands at my head just to see if I would flinch. For many years, I quietly thought the experience was my fault. If I had been bigger or more imposing or more popular, perhaps it wouldn't have happened to me. I changed schools and left the bully behind, but I didn't leave behind that feeling of powerlessness that the experience generated. That was why making new friends was scary, and treating others kindly sometimes felt like a big risk. It was hard to forgive my bully, but I was able to start first by forgiving myself. By first recognizing it wasn't my fault to be singled out, or that I didn't know how to protect myself. By forgiving myself for not being stronger or more popular, I began to forgive myself too for the consequences of my self-protective behavior. I didn't always live up to the kind of friend I hoped to be, but I could forgive myself for that as well.
What do you want to do, sir? Let him go. We need to get this ship to safety.
We must head directly into the eye of the storm.
Iroh smiles. Aboard the fisherman's boat, he and Sokka cling to ropes.
You're too young to die! Turn back for the final warm-up!
Appa flies toward them. Aang leaps onto the deck. Lightning strikes the mast, which begins to fall. Aang bends water upward, slicing the mast in half. Sokka ties a rope around himself and the fisherman. Aang takes the other end of the rope and leaps onto Appa. Sokka and the fisherman fly through the air and land in the saddle. They beam at each other. A giant wave rises behind them. Wave engulfs Appa. They sink below the water. Aang lets go of the reins. He looks toward the others who cling to the saddle. Aang's eyes and arrows begin to glow. He grabs the reins. He slams his fists together, creating a pocket of air around them. Appa rises toward the surface. Then Zuko's ship sails into the eye of the storm. He, Iroh, and the crew stand together on the deck.
I'm sorry.
Your apology is accepted.
Appa rises from the water and flies over Zuko's ship. Aang and Zuko lock eyes. Appa flies upward through the eye of the storm. Then, at the cliffside cave.
You're alive! You owe this boy an apology.
He doesn't have to apologize.
What if instead of an apology, I give him a free fish and we call it even?
Actually, I don't eat meat.
Fish ain't meat.
Seriously? You're still gonna pay me, right? The fisherman puts a fish in Sokka's hand.
This is about how things would have turned out if I hadn't run away. I'm here now, and I'm going to make the most of it.
I don't think you're going to have those nightmares anymore.
We're here now? Well, I guess I wouldn't be. Thank you for saving my life, Avatar.
Thanks.
When Aang accepts his past, he's able to continue his journey to save the world. If he had been unable to forgive himself for running away, he might have repeated the cycle of running away from confrontation and the truth about himself. And if he keeps repeating the cycle of running away, he should end up letting the whole world down again. As for a friend I've been telling you about, when the school year started, I was put in the same math class as him. And when I would walk out the door, he would also walk out the door, and I would feel weird because it would be hard to say things like, excuse me, or sorry, or small phrases like that. Eventually, I decided that I wanted to apologize to him in person, personally. At lunch one day, I walked up to him and I basically said, sorry for being a jerk. It was definitely not some smooth apology like you see on TV or in the movies. I stuttered a lot and added a lot of extra words and was generally awkward, but it felt good to finally apologize myself. And by apologizing, I also forgave myself and I moved on.
When Jesus taught his followers to pray, the prayer included the phrase, "Forgive us our debts as we have also forgiven our debtors." In some translations, the word here is sins, in others debt. And the word debt is an interesting way to describe the state of being stuck in poor choices, habits, or behaviors. A debt can accumulate interest, growing in size as time passes. Sometimes we take out more debt to cover the first loan, and in so doing, become even more indebted. The theologian Luke Brotherington explains that indebtedness is like digging a well for much-needed water, only to have the sides collapse as one digs, such that one is buried alive by the very means by which alleviation was sought. In the same way, guilt and regret can lead us to take actions that make us feel even more guilty and ashamed, ultimately buried beneath those actions. So when Jesus invites us to pray, forgive us our debts, he is offering us an interruption in this accumulation of guilt and regret. Forgiveness fills whatever hole was created by our first failing so that we're no longer compelled to repeat the mistake. Rather than running away from attachment and developing habits like avoidance and aggression, we can focus on what it is we're called to do. Thomas Merton again speaks to this. He counsels, "The thing to do when you have made a mistake is not to give up doing what you were doing and start something altogether new, but to start over again with the thing you began badly and try, for the love of God, to do it well." When we know that God forgives and loves us enables us to forgive ourselves, we can get unstuck from the past. We can say, like Aang, "I'm here now, and I'm going to make the best of it."
Another lesson we can learn from this episode of Avatar is that the journey of forgiveness is available to everyone. Zuko and Aang are on opposite sides of a conflict and could even be considered enemies. Yet the show presents their forgiveness journeys as parallel. It is actually Zuko, the anti-hero, who says he is sorry within the episode. Finally, there are two characters in this episode who help others on their journey to acceptance and self-forgiveness. One is Katara, Aang's friend. The other is Iroh, Zuko's uncle. I think this is very important because forgiveness and self-forgiveness does not have to be something we do alone. We help each other on the path by having compassion for one another, listening to one another, and helping us tell the truth about ourselves.
Is there a moment in your past that haunts you? Like Aang's dream haunted him? What is the story that you've told yourself that keeps you stuck? Is this story really the whole truth? If you were sitting around a fire with a trusted friend or family member, what questions would they ask? If you were sitting there with Jesus himself, what story would Jesus tell about you? Even your past mistakes and your biggest regret. How would the story that Jesus tells and the forgiveness he offers change how you see yourself? Finally, consider the friends in this story. Are you ever in a position to be like Katara, who asks Aang, even in the very first scene, what's going on? Are you upset and troubled, and helps him interpret his past? Or like Zuko's uncle, who helps the crew members better understand this young man? Are you ever in a position where you can enable the truth about someone to come out in a place of safety? How can we become safe spaces for one another, even in the midst of big conflicts and storms? For my part, I'm thankful for the invitation that a writing assignment in a safe space gave me to start retelling my story. And once I was on that path towards forgiveness, I was over many years able to develop stronger relationships and friendships. And I now even have the privilege of parenting. And on its best days, this means listening to my people, my son Jacob and my daughter Edith, with the same compassion that Aang's friends and Zuko's uncle offer to them. And they're here to listen to me. As Jacob said, this is important because forgiveness does not have to be something we do alone. We help each other along the path by having compassion for one another, listening to one another, and helping us tell the truth about ourselves so that we ultimately can receive God's forgiveness. We are going to take communion in a few moments. Communion is an ancient tradition where we celebrate love and forgiveness. Jesus died because he refused to reciprocate hatred and violence and instead chose forgiveness and love for his enemies. Communion creates a space where we can bring our debts and the weight of our guilt to the source of love and forgiveness. We do this here week in and week out because we all make mistakes quite regularly. But those debts don't need to accumulate interest. We can let them go. And in this same space, we can forgive others. See our true oneness with humanity. And with an empathy like Jesus, say, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. So when you are ready, please come and take a piece of bread and some juice. We have gluten-free crackers. You can eat and drink at the tables in front or at the sides or in the middle. And you can take it back to your seat. Whatever feels most comfortable for you. Also at this time, you can light a candle as a form of prayer at the back of the auditorium. You can light a candle or write out a prayer for Ukraine at the table in the back right corner. You might want to pray with someone at the back or write out a prayer at the stations under Journey and Grow banners and post it in the frames. A team will pray for you during the week. Or you might like to make a financial gift and put it in the wooden towers at the back, or just sing and listen to the music. This is a time for us to respond to God in the way we each see fit.